Welcome to Spotlight on Africa, with me, Daniel Finnan. This week, we'll be hearing about the constitutional referendum in Burundi. On the 17th of May, Burundians go to the polls to decide on changes to presidential term limits. These changes to the constitution could potentially enable President Pierre Nkurunziza to stay in power until the year 2034. Nkurunziza has already been in power since 2005, and this would allow him to go for another 2 7-year terms. His bid for a third term in 2015 already led to bloodshed. There were protests, an attempted coup d'etat, and crackdown by security forces. It's thought some 1,200 people were killed. The International Criminal Court said it was investigating state-sponsored crimes against humanity in the country. However, Burundi then became the first country to leave the ICC. For the referendum, the EU has warned that it's taking place in a persistent climate of intimidation and repression. The country's Catholic bishops also said they were opposed to changes to the constitution. A statement said it was not the appropriate time to make profound changes. Furthermore, rights groups like Human Rights Watch say the campaign for the referendum has been marred by violence. We spoke to Jean-Régis Douimana, a media analyst at Lake Tanganyika University. Have you heard any reports of political violence ahead of the referendum on the 17th of May?
Yeah, there's a lot of political violence in the country now. Members of the FNL of Agathon Rwasa, who is the vice president of the parliament, so they are now the new target of Burundi security forces and the militiamen in Bonerakure. Because FNL, they are promoting the no campaign. So since they are voting for no, they become a target of Nkurunziza. Guys have been kidnapped. We can assume that they are somewhere in police station being tortured or at the secret service headquarters. We don't know, but the new targets are the FNL.
For our listeners, we better mention that the FNL is traditionally opposed to the CNDD-FDD, the ruling party.
Yes, it is opposed, but remember that FNL has two wings. There's a FNL that works closely with the government, but there's another FNL which has a former rebel, Agathon Rwasa, who is very, 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 very well known in the FNL. Rwasa is the most powerful as an FNL. So people, they follow him, they vote as the way he recommended. That's why his member, the members of his political party, his coalition, are targeted now.
There was some information that emerged suggesting that the police were now authorized to carry out arrests at night without having arrest warrants.
Yeah, it's a new law. It's a new law voted by the parliament a couple of weeks ago, and the police to do that kind of search during the night. But people are worried. They steal everything in the house. But the other thing, there's something called cyber perquisition. Now, police and even militiamen have right to search in your phone. If you don't unlock your phone, you will be arrested. So they search in every phone, in the cyber, everything, in the laptop. You have to open these kind of devices.
There was also information on social media that in some areas there were residents rising up against the Imbonerakure, the youth wing of the ruling party.
Yes, yeah, true. But the problem with these guys trying to protest against militiamen, there is a boomerang effect. They become a victim. If militiamen, they are mistreating people in the rural area, yes, you can attack Imbonerakure, but following days, you will be arrested. That's what happened on the 1st January of this year, where Imbonerakure tried to mistreat some people who were partying at St. Sylvester. And for 2 days after, they were all arrested, put in jail. Because remember, militiamen are more powerful, even more powerful than police. So if you do that, you are likely to be arrested following days.
Following the attempted coup in 2015, there was a period where there were a number of attacks against security forces, but these seem to have died down in the last year or so.
Yeah, it goes down because it seems that the rebel movement were not well organized. Even the opposition seems to do not have a common view of how to handle this issue, either politically or using armed groups. So these armed groups were so divided, it gives even the room for Nkurunziza to tighten his security procedures and all that, even to strengthen the militia and the royalists inside the police and the army. But still, armed groups are becoming more united, according to some sources. Maybe in the future, they may be more powerful or they will be able to attack Nkurunziza.
We know, of course, what the referendum says in terms of the term limits for the president. What else is this referendum about? What else is it voting on?
I can mention that no one has a copy of this project, even some elite, some cadre of the ruling party. They even don't know what is inside this project of amendment. We don't know. But what we know, the thing that were very controversial is these things of term limits and the number of years of a term, which moves from 5 to 7. Other things were not deeply touched, according to sources in civil society. But the quota ethnic numbers of the quota still there, 40%. Hutus and 60% Hutu in the army and security forces and some institution, which was there even before. The very interesting and controversial part of this is this term limit.
The quotas there that you mentioned, they were outlined originally in the Arusha Agreement. Now, do you yourself consider this referendum to mean the effective end of the Arusha Agreement or not?
Yeah, it's an effective end of the Arusha argument because of this issue of term limit, this issue of power sharing. So, you know, with this constitution, Nkurunziza become more powerful than his ruling party, even not the government. But which is very, very contrary of the Arusha argument, which was like Tutsi and Hutu, Twa, all the community in the country have a sort of power sharing, which is very, very well specified in the Arusha Agreement and the constitution that came from that Arusha Agreement. The whole power will be centered around the president.
Of course, it was both Tutsis and Hutus who protested against the third term for Nkurunziza. Do you see any divide between the Tutsis and Hutus having been exacerbated over the last 3 years?
No, not at all. The opposition now is still have Hutu and Tutsi, even if former royalists to Nkurunziza, who are Hutu, are now in the opposition. And inside the country, Hutu are not attacking Tutsi, as we saw in the past. Tutsi are not attacking Hutu. But Nkurunziza is using these ethnical charged the language to trigger ethnical motivated violence or war, which he didn't succeed because Hutu now are under oppression, like FNLs, are dying the same way Tuts are dying. You see, on this issue, Nkurunziza is a big loser, and people's eyes are being opened with these things of Nkurunziza trying to use ethnical charged language.
There are still a number of Burundian refugees who are residing in neighbouring countries. Do you think that in the lead up to the referendum and during the referendum and after the referendum that the humanitarian situation could worsen maybe?
The humanitarian situation could worsen in case if, for example, there is a war or if there's more political driven violence in the country, there will be more refugees in the neighborhood, in the neighbor countries. So and then this brings issues. But if there's the peace, if the regime falls, we'll be lucky to have a peaceful territory in the whole country. People may go back home. But if there's more political violence, then the international community should come up with a strategy to deal with refugees, especially those who are in Tanzania, Uganda, Congo, Rwanda.
Jean-Régiste Douimana there, a media analyst at Lake Tanganyika University. Burundians go to the polls for the referendum on the 17th of May. For this week's Spotlight on Africa, I'm Daniel Finnan. Thanks for listening.